Shoes. Recorded live.
Hello, everyone. This is Stefan Gonick from EFTAlive.com. Welcome to the EFT Mentoring and Advanced Topics monthly teleclass. On this teleclass, there'll be opportunities to discuss challenging cases, to talk about advanced techniques in the art of delivery, and to talk about feelings that may come up as a practitioner, or pretty much anything else that you would like to discuss or want help with. And there'll also be opportunities for people to contribute their own ideas in addition to any answers or thoughts that I might have. So at the end of each question, after I give my answer, I'll invite other people to share any thoughts that they have as well. So anyway, if you would like to talk now, if you have a question of any sort, EFT related, please hit star 8 to request to talk, and we'll get started.
Hello?
Hi, Kathleen.
Hello.
How can I help you, Kathleen?
Oh, okay. I was wondering if you're probably familiar with something that occurs when a spouse passes away, and the remaining spouse, a few months later, begins a series of physical ailments.
Uh-huh.
Are you familiar with that?
Well, I'm familiar with things like that. I mean, we're specifically talking a spouse-related phenomenon. It's not something I've studied directly. But there are a lot of things that can happen with a major loss of any sort. So did you have a particular question about it?
Well, I have a client, and she was caring for her spouse, her husband, for, you know, quite a while. And then he passed away. And during that period of time, she was relatively healthy. And she's not overly saddened with the loss because he was pretty stubborn and not taking care of himself and got himself in that predicament. And so, but now she has different kinds of ailments, like a shoulder problem and a heart problem. And she has a neighbor that happened to also. Her husband passed away, and then a few months later, she began coming down with different kinds of problems, physical problems.
Mm-hmm.
And she has heard of this happening, and I'm going to be working with her and, you know, to get rid of the different pain, the different physical ailments.
Sure. So, and your question is?
Just wondering if you're familiar with it, if anybody's ever had this, you know, come in contact with somebody who this has happened to, and am I going to be dealing with first the physical pain and then fishing for the underlying emotional issue?
All right. So it sounds like, you know, your basic question is, how do you approach helping her?
Okay. Sounds good.
Okay, good. So, I mean, this is really, in a way, similar to, you know, any other situation where there's been a major event happening and then the person starts getting, you know, these various symptoms and show up. You know, there may be certain things that are specific to when a spouse dies, but really you can approach this, you know, the same way you would approach the same phenomenon where somebody has symptoms after any major event. So, you know, even though consciously she's thinking that she's okay with him passing, sounds like maybe she's even possibly angry or resentful in the way he didn't do a good job of taking care of himself, and she's okay with him dying, that's sort of all conscious level stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so that makes sense.
Mm-hmm, yes.
And it makes sense that there could also be a lot of subconscious emotional reactions that may even surprise her as you explore it.
Okay.
You know, there's still a loss. Chances are, one of the things I like to start with for people is that, you know, there's the five basic emotions, kind of like the three primary colors, which is, you know, anger, sadness, fear, shame, and then sort of all the positive feelings sort of grouped together.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Anytime there's a major event, we usually feel all five of those emotions.
Mm-hmm.
We have reactions to all five of them. Some of them will be more at the surface level, and they tend to be experienced in layers. So there'll be something at the topmost level that's maybe the only one you're aware of. As you work through that emotion, you become aware of the next one down, and then the next one down, the next one down. It's also often the case that the top one is a defensive emotion against feeling the more deeper vulnerable ones. So, you know, she's, you know, from your description, it sounds like there's a little bit of, well, you know, he got what's coming to him, he didn't take care of himself, and I'm okay with him being dead. It sounds like there's a little anger and certainly frustration, maybe some resentment, something like that. But it's, I think you're going to find it's going to be very helpful to look deeper and, you know, see what other kinds of things are coming up. I mean, she still is being left alone. You know, there's still a major loss here, even if he wasn't all that fun to be around in his, you know, last months or whatever. It's still somebody she's probably been with for many years.
Mm-hmm.
There may be feelings about her future, fears about the future.
Possibly.
Yeah, there could be feelings from her childhood that get triggered.
Mm-hmm.
You may have a lot of guilt and things like that that come up.
Okay.
So, you with me so far in all this?
Yes.
Okay. Now, you did ask, you know, should I start with the physical symptoms and then go to the underlying emotional sources?
Yes.
Having come from a psychotherapeutic background originally, I'm always liking going straight for the emotions. On the other hand, sometimes with EFT, you know, you get this amazing result just tapping the symptoms.
Mm-hmm.
So it's perfectly fine to just say, let's see what we can do, just tap on your symptoms. And if you can clear it up that way, then yahoo, cool, that was fantastic, pretty amazing, and you're good. If you don't get much effect from that, and I usually warn my client if I try it that, you know, we'll see what happens, it may or may not work. We may need to address the emotional causes to really get an effect here, or it may just miraculously work without doing that. So it's never, you know, bad to start with that. One of the, also the nice things about work on a symptom is sometimes the underlying emotional cause will sort of pop out as you work on a symptom.
That's right.
Right. Mm-hmm. So I'll also tell the client, you know, let's do a little exploratory tapping. We'll try tapping on the symptom, but just to let yourself be aware of any thoughts or feelings that come up as we're tapping, and be sure to stop me right away and let me know what they are.
Okay.
Sort of explore that way.
Hmm. Okay.
All right. Now, there may be some particular phenomenon. You know, there's sometimes when, I mean, I don't think this is necessarily related, but it just sort of reminds me of the whole survivor guilt dynamic, you know, when there's some sort of, you know, accident, like a car accident or a boating accident or any kind of disaster, and, you know, you're the one who lives and other people die.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm not saying that applies here at all, but I'm just acknowledging that. Go ahead.
Maybe there's a cousin at work here.
Yeah, there could possibly be a cousin. I mean, the thing that jumps to my mind, just the sense of being left alone, abandoned. Often when somebody dies, we feel abandoned, even though logically we understand that's not what happened.
Mm-hmm.
Right? We understand our mentally, our adult logical selves go, well, person died. They didn't leave me. But sometimes the kid in us feels abandoned and left.
Yeah. That resonates.
Yeah. And there's also just stuff about the future. You know, if she's an older woman, she may have fears about being alone for the rest of her life or who knows what. It's all going to be within her.
Mm-hmm. So I could ask, does this remind you of anything when you were a child?
You can certainly ask that. You know, I like, even though there's all these possibilities that we're discussing,
uh-huh.
I really like to, you know, start with a beginner's mind, start fresh. I'll keep these possibilities in the back of my mind, but, you know, it's more interesting to me to see what comes out of the client rather than me going, so do any feelings of abandonment come up for you or something like that?
Yeah.
You know, one thing that you can try to help her get in touch with it, she may pretty quickly get in touch with different thoughts and feelings. If she doesn't, there's a body-oriented technique from my original body-oriented gestalt therapy training background that I find very helpful to help people get in touch with stuff. And I actually wrote an article about this called A Body-Oriented Method of Getting in Touch with Core Memories. But you could also use it in this situation. And the way you do it is you tell the person, just be with your husband's death. Don't think about it and analyze it or anything else. Just sort of be with it. And just have the person do that for a moment or two. And then say, as you're being with it, notice where you are feeling something in your body as you're being with this, what happened. Being with your father, your husband being dead. And usually, you know, the person will be able to identify that, well, I feel something in my stomach or in my chest or in my throat or something like that.
Okay.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
We use the person's bodily experience of what's going on as a doorway to their emotions and underlying emotional issues. The next step, after asking where they feel in their body, is to have them describe in more detail exactly what they're experiencing in their body, with the purpose of helping them get more in touch with their bodily experience. So if the person says, well, I feel it in my stomach, I'll say, well, okay, and what does that feel like in your stomach? You know, like, first of all, how big is it? You know, sort of show me the diameter. And what does it feel like more specifically? Is it tight or thick or soft or hard or hot or cold or electrical or, you know, any of those kind of things? So I'll name some possibilities just to get them thinking. So usually they'll say something, you know, like, well, I feel like there's this tight, hard knot in my stomach, say. At that point, you know, they're even more in tune with their bodily experience. And then I'll say, all right, just be with the thing that happened, in this case, your husband having died. And then I'll say back to them how they describe their bodily experience. So be with the fact that your husband is dead and you have this tight, hard knot in your stomach. And then just relax and be receptive to something coming to you. Don't reach for it. Just be friendly, receptive to receive whatever comes up. And lots of times, things will start coming up. And they'll just pop into their head. So it's a handy technique to uncover the underlying cause of anything.
I like that.
Yeah. Thank you. Any other questions so far?
I have another question.
All right, well, let's cycle through questions. And for the rest of you, I see that Glennis would like to speak next. If you have any thoughts on this husband dying thing and you know, having symptoms show up, please feel free to share those and before you ask your question or otherwise just go ahead and answer your question. So thanks a lot, Kathleen. I'm going to go ahead and mute you.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Hello.
Hi, Glennis.
Yeah, can you hear me?
I can hear you fine.
Ah, right. I haven't done this before, so I'm a bit wobbly about it.
No.
Yeah, I can relate exactly to what Catherine is saying, because I'm experiencing similar symptoms in connection with my husband's illness from a car crash 3 years ago.
Are you aware of any what your emotional connections are?
Yeah, I can relate to the anger, the sadness, because he's been diagnosed with a front lobe dementia that was triggered off by our accident in the Canary Islands 3 years ago when the car was a write-off. So 3 months after that accident, memory issues started showing up. And since then, there's been quite a lot of cognitive confusion. So, I have done some Gestalt training myself for 3 years, as well as the EFT training. So, I am in touch with the underlying issues. There are issues around anger, sadness, fear, shame. I'm wondering what was the fifth one you said?
Oh, this one is just the positive emotions, like love and joy and...
So are we talking about sense?
Are we talking about what?
Centix-Ingestalt. S-E-N-T-I-C-S. The Centix. I think.
I'm not familiar with that word.
All right. Yeah. Okay. So, what I've done tapping on myself in connection with it, and I don't seem to be. I seem to shift it temporarily. You know, I do the tapping in bed. I also do the TAT, tapas acupressure technique. And yep. I do some Reiki. But I'm finding that there's something happening each day that is triggering something new off. And I do realise that these triggers are related to my childhood, of which I've done a lot of, I've had about 5 or 6 years of gestalt psychotherapy. I've done with two different therapists over the years, as well as psychoanalytical work. But what's happened since my husband's illness and me feeling responsible for looking after him and the carer, I'm finding that resentments and anger from my childhood are coming up in connection with my mother's illness. Because from my birth, my mother was, we called in England an invalid, but disabled from my birth. And she died when I was 20. And there was quite a lot of restrictions on me around education, going on holidays, and things like that. And at the moment, I've got quite a lot of things in place regarding care and support so that I can be freed up. But still, I'm getting these physical symptoms of a bad shoulder, a bad knee, pain down the leg, lots of digestive problems. So all those things that Catherine really was talking about. Tomorrow morning at 10:30, I'm going to the doctor's to go for the results of 3 blood tests I've had to check for rheumatoid arthritis, for gout, for excess uric acid in the blood. And then I've had 2 x-rays, one on my knee and one on my hip. But deep down inside, I feel it's emotionally related. It's manifesting itself physically. And on a practical level, I appear to be dealing with these issues that are coming up. But physically, it's showing itself.
Sure. So it sounds like you already have some insights as to some of the underlying emotional issues. Like you mentioned the thing with your mother being disabled and, all the restrictions and resentment of having to, take care of her as a child instead of you being taken care of.
Right.
And you being free.
Yeah.
So there's 2 elements there. It's like, I want to be a free child, like other children get to go out and play without having any, undue responsibilities.
Yeah.
And there's also the issue of, who takes care of me?
Yeah.
When I'm a child, my parents are supposed to be taking care of me, not the other way around.
Yeah.
And so that kind of thing, you're right, can come up now. It's kind of like, okay, now I'm feeling restricted again, and I'm taking care of him, and who's going to take care of me?
Yeah, my child side wants to be taken care of.
Yeah.
Because I've lost this strong figure that I had, this strong parenting-like figure, who's now
right.
like a 3-year-old.
So, yeah, it's a good insight.
Mm.
So... Mm. It's hard, no matter how much we know as therapists, it's often hard to be our own therapist. As wonderful as EFT is as a self-help technique, there's times when we just don't have the objectivity and clarity to do it for ourselves. So, I will work with EFT practitioners to work on my own stuff for some issues. Some issues I feel fine doing it by myself. Some issues I feel like I need to do it with somebody else. Even though I may know more EFT than the person I'm working with. It's just something about having this, outside intelligence helping us get clarity, to understand best how to tap on the issue. So one of the things you said sort of reminds me of, a good possibility to consider in any case, especially when the tapping doesn't seem to be helping much, either not helping at all or only helping you feel better and then it gets bad again, so it's a temporary relief or partial relief.
Yeah, it's temporary. It's better in the moment.
Yeah, so it's temporary. One of the things to consider and this would apply to Kathleen as well with her client, is to look for the secondary gain issues. So secondary gain is, you know, the upside to having the problem or the downside to getting over it.
Yeah.
So, you know, your case, you know, potential upside could be, you know, me having ailments means I get some attention. I get to be taken care of, too.
I'm getting a lot of attention from people, friends.
Yeah. And even though you can't get it from your husband, you can still get it from a lot of other people.
Yeah, I'm getting it in that direction.
So you may subconsciously be reluctant to give that up. And it's important to then tap on that as well as recognize that there's other ways to get love and attention without having to be sick.
That's good.
So that's just a possibility.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah. So thanks for sharing your thoughts about, you know, what happens, the symptoms that come up after a spouse dies. In your case, your spouse gets sick. Did you have any other questions yourself?
Are you speaking to me now?
Yeah, I'm still speaking to you.
Not at the moment. I'm still taking all that in.
Okay, great.
Thank you.
So I'm going to go ahead and mute you, Glynis. And if anybody else has a question, go ahead and hit star 8. Okay, Susan. Oh, yeah, Susan, if you have any thoughts about the husband dying thing, too, feel free to share that as well as ask your question. Oops. Sorry, Susan, I didn't quite work out right. Okay. Susan.
Hi.
There you are.
Well, I have something to add to this husband dying discussion.
Okay, great.
My husband died very suddenly 5 years ago, and EFT was what helped me the most of everything.
Great.
And as far as the physical symptoms manifesting, Kathleen, I got to a point where I couldn't walk more than 10 feet without having to sit down. And what really helped me was being specific. And as Stefan said, all the emotions came up, you know, the shame, everything. And the more specific that I could get with it, the faster I got well. And it's a process. It was a very long time because there's a lot of things that come up. And guilt was probably one of the biggest ones. So that's
you want to say a little bit about the guilt just to give her some more specifics?
In my case, he died suddenly of a brain aneurysm. And our last words were harsh. So I had a tremendous amount of guilt around that. And it's also a good example of why you can't always work on yourself, because sometimes you need another practitioner to help push you in the place that you're not going to go on your own.
That's right.
And that was truly eye-opening for me, and it finally got me the breakthrough that it took years to get to. It was just last September when I was lucky enough to have a conversation with Tanya Prince, and she took me aside, and we dealt with the rest of it. And it's amazing that hearing these conversations between, you know, Gwen's story and Kathleen's client, it still brings up things for me.
Sure.
And it's like, you know, there's a lot of aha moments. But my advice would be, and I thought of the same thing, the gestalt therapy. I think that's perfect to get in touch with what might be going on. But dealing with as many individual and specific events around not just the death, but the whole caretaking issues leading up to the death, things that you didn't say, things that you didn't do right, things that you could have done differently. You know, the time I yelled at him for not wanting to eat something, you know, that kind of thing can really...
Sort of guilt, things you're guilty about and regrets.
Yes, regret. Yeah. That's a good word.
Yeah.
So
I think you made a really good point. In addition to the, you know, as far as working with another person, in addition to the greater objectivity of the other person not being in the issue, the point you made about having somebody push you to deal with something that you didn't really want to go, a place you didn't want to go to, you weren't comfortable going to by yourself. I think that's a really a good point about
even if you know it's there intellectually, you
exactly.
can't really get to it without help.
That's right.
I hope that's helpful.
Well, the nice thing about this call is, you know, we have a whole group of intelligences that we can apply to each question and issue.
You seem to have attracted the right group of people for Kathleen's problem.
Yeah, it's amazing. All three of you have some similar experience or related experience.
I do have a question away from that topic, though.
Sure.
How would you go about, I just moved to Marblehead, and you and I have had a conversation before about knowing when you're beyond the scope of your own abilities and when you need to refer someone out. Or get supervision, but I'm talking about someone who, you know, might be suicidal.
Right.
Other than, you know, advising them to go to the emergency room, you know, I'm wondering about how to set up, how to find someone that I can refer people to, because when I was in Maine, I had that. And I don't have that here.
Right.
And the person that I used to refer to didn't do EFT. She did do EMDR. So do you have any suggestions for me about that, Stefan?
Well, I think, first of all, the point you're bringing up is which is to have pre-identified somebody that you can send somebody to in an emergency situation like that. Like you say, you have a client who says they're suicidal or gives indications that they might be suicidal, it's really good to have somebody on hand that you can refer them to.
Mm-hmm.
So I just want to acknowledge, you know, the wisdom of that point right off the bat. You know, the question is, does somebody need to be local or can they be at a distance?
No, I think this would have to be local.
Okay, well, in Marblehead, you know, I don't know anybody there.
Well, this general area, Beverly, Salem, you know.
Well, it's an interesting question. You know, does the person have to know EFT? EMDR is certainly a very valid alternative to EFT. It's also one of the...
I think they at least have to be open to mind-body kind of therapies. But how
right.
do you
well,
go the... around finding someone, identifying someone, just pick up, you know, look at other advertisements?
Well, this is the question that you encounter anytime somebody wants to find a therapist in a new area. You know, the thing about EFT therapy is that there's a limited number of us, and so people tend to search for it on the internet or go to the EmoFree site or something like that. They use a different method than people used to use for finding therapists in the past. But typically, if you wanted to find a therapist who is local to you, you would just start asking around. Hey, do you know a good therapist? And typically people would recommend somebody that they've worked with themselves. They go, yeah, you know, my therapist is great. You know, you should see her or him. And if you ask several people and you get some, you know, more than one recommendation for the same person, that's good.
That's a good indication.
Yeah. Or if it's somebody you really trust and you really like their recommendation, like I found a therapist for myself that way. When one person made a very strong recommendation for somebody, so I checked him out, and after one session, I went, yeah, this guy's great.
Well,
so,
the other issue around this particular person is she's being referred to me by her mother, who lives in another state and can't get to her, and she's gone to great lengths to try and find an EFT practitioner that's within driving distance. However, and I've said to her, it sounds like it might be out of my scope. And she said, well, she can't do, you know, can't take medication. And I do EFT, and I really believe in it, and I really want to try this. And, you know, she keeps pushing, but that's what she wants for her daughter. But, you know, my sense is, you know, I don't think so.
Well, there's another question. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, am I just being too sensitive about it? I mean, there's...
Have
on the other hand,
the
really want to help this person. She's also a massage therapist, and I'm also a body worker, so, you know, I may be able to, I'm sure I can help her on some level, But I'm really sensitive to the whole working above the scope and the legalities around that also.
Sure. Well, there's two issues now that I'm hearing. One is, you know, how do you handle a case like this where you think it may be beyond your level of competency, you know, like dealing with somebody who has suicidal tendencies.
But they still
on the other hand, you know, EFT may be very helpful for her to resolve that. But there's a second issue, which is I'm always a little cautious when a third person calls me up on the behalf of another person.
Exactly.
You know, I don't mind the person making the initial contact, but, you know, I very much want to quickly start talking to the person who's supposed to be working with me
mm-hmm.
and see where they're at. You know, if they were for some reason just feeling, you know, a little insecure or timid to make the call, the first call themselves, okay. But I still need to hear from this person that they're really interested in working with me and doing this work.
What's his
rather
exactly
than
I told her mother.
Yeah. So you might want to check into that too.
And it's not competency so much. I think it's probably more of a liability issue that I get concerned about, especially when there's a third person involved.
Sure.
So that's a pretty new area of discussion, I'm sure, but I was an insurance adjuster in my previous life, so I'm pretty sensitive to the liability issues that could come up around something like that.
Right. There is insurance available for us, by the way. And it's not even very expensive. It's like
really?
Like between $150 and $200 a year, something like that. And I don't remember right off the top of the head. I got some myself at one point. You'd have to search around for it, or I'd have to dig it up.
Well, I have, you know, ABMP insurance, then this goes, in my mind, through, you know, under the heading of energy work. But that's a whole other discussion for another time, I guess.
Okay. I guess I just wanted to mention that there is insurance available. I'm not sure that would necessarily address the situation, but you mentioned liability. When I said outside of competency, I was just thinking of the suicidal aspect that you're worried that you wouldn't know how to handle that part correctly. And, you know, what happens if she gets more serious about suicide? You know, are you able to recognize the signs of suicidality?
Well, somebody telling me they're suicidal is enough for me.
Right. So, well, first of all, that's absolutely fine to say, you know, I don't have to have my door open to every single possible type of client, and there's certain types of clients that I'm not comfortable with, and if they want to do EFT, then that's great that they should work with an EFT practitioner who's comfortable working with somebody who's feeling suicidal. I think that's fine. You know, for you, that may just be the bottom line for you.
Well, considering there's, I guess I'm concerned about licensing issues and the fact that I'm not a psychotherapist.
Right, sure. Well, you need to be comfortable working with somebody. You're not going to be a very effective, EFT practitioner if you're feeling very uncomfortable in the situation, you know, unless you can tap that clear. But it may not be something that you want to tap clear.
It could be because, you know, the third party was, you know, what's your success rate, what's your method, blah, 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 blah.
Right.
And, you know, she'd already been to someone else who she didn't like, and it's, you know, kind of a shopping issue, too, I think.
Sure.
Which, there's also issues around the fact that I really think I could probably help this woman. So, a lot of it is my own stuff, for sure.
Okay, so, you know, if you're thinking that, you know, some of your own issues may be getting triggered here, then it's certainly something you can tap on and then see where you end up.
Mm-hmm.
You may tap yourself clear and go, you know, I'm still not comfortable working with this person. Or you may tap some of these feelings clear and go, okay, I think I am ready to take this on. If you wanted to, you know, we could spend some time talking about what the feelings are that are coming up for you around this. But we may want to come back to that after giving people, you know, more chances to ask questions.
Sounds good to me.
But But, you know, dealing with feelings that come up as a practitioner is one of the aspects of this call, so that's really fine to do. So why don't we come back to that after the next call, or next question. How's that sound?
Very good. Sounds awesome.
Okay, great. Can I go ahead and mute you? Okay, and Kathleen.
Hi. Well, I had a comment to Glennis's situation, and I had a question.
Sure.
I had a neck problem that I just could not resolve, and I worked with a couple of practitioners, and I tapped myself to death. I had marks, nail marks, where the sore spot is, and I just wouldn't budge. And finally, and someone had said to me it was a father issue, and I tapped on all kinds of things I thought it could possibly be, and then one day I was driving and I just tapped. I said, even though I don't know what the specific problem is, I went through the tapping and then it moved. And then I just did some exercising with my arms and I got it to go away.
Oh, great.
So just tapping on not being able to find the problem.
Yeah. So, and there's a couple possible explanations as to what happened and what you're describing. It could be that there's a number of emotional, sort of underlying causes to your neck problem.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes when we have physical issues, even after you've resolved the underlying emotions, the body still takes a while to recover.
Oh, okay.
It's not just that, okay, I resolve the issue and the pain instantly disappears.
Well, actually, it was on the left side, and it instantly moved to the right side. So I expected it to go away just as fast as it moved from side to one side to the other.
Okay. When a pain moves, that's usually a sign that things are moving emotionally, that you're making good progress on it.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, one possible explanation, like I said, is it can take a while for the body to fully recover. And it could also be that, there was multiple contributors and you cleared a number of them. And at the end, you just sort of tapped on not knowing what it was, and subconsciously your mind dug up whatever remaining piece there was. And even though you never were even aware of what it was, that still worked.
Okay.
Right. So that's another possibility. It's hard to ever know for sure what happened there.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a great thing to keep in mind, though, just that general tapping of, even though I don't know what this is.
Yeah, I was driving and it just popped in my head and I said, okay, I'll try this.
Yeah.
The other thing is, I had a couple of things I was had been excited about kind of disappoint me today, and I got overwhelmed with the negativity. So I'm so grateful for the EFT. I tapped it away, but I wanted to feel a lot of positivity. And as I was tapping, I thought, well, how can I turn the emotion? And I'm just not that advanced yet to know how to reframe. I guess that's what I would probably need to do.
Uh-huh. Sure.
Or add in positive language.
Yep. We can talk about that.
Okay.
There's two general approaches to sort of bringing in the positive, as you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the classic EFT that Gary Craig taught us was simply focus on the negative and clear out the energy disturbance.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea is once all the negative stuff is cleared out, you sort of naturally return or come to some positive state. But there are times, and it's lots of times that actually is quite sufficient and you're done at that point. But sometimes it is very helpful to bring in the positive.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a number of things you can do with that. Now, I'm going to mention three different things, actually, as I'm thinking about it. One of them is Pat Carrington's Choices Method. Have you heard of that?
I think so. I think I read it on one of the email.
One of the articles?
One of the articles, uh-huh.
Yeah, she wrote an article about it where she teaches you the basic method, and she also sells a whole manual on how to do it where she goes into a lot more detail.
Oh, okay, that's helpful.
And it's a good manual. I bought it, and I use it, and I found it very helpful.
I'm going to get that.
Yeah, I've definitely encouraged people to get it. I thought it was very good. So I'm not going to go into a lot of detail about that. I mean, you can read about it. But just the quick version is before you even start tapping, you come up with a positive choice that is the antidote to the negativity.
Oh, I like that. feeling. Okay, a little planning. Mm-hmm.
Right. Now, it's not necessarily just the opposite, by the way. In fact, the opposite of the negative feeling is usually the least interesting choice.
Okay.
So you want to come up with something that's an antidote to it, not simply the opposite. But like I say, the article has a little bit about that. The manual goes into a lot of detail about that. One of the nice things about the choices method is, you know, you put a fair amount of time and energy to come up with some really compelling positive choice. Just the process of doing that is good. And then there's a tapping sequence where you do one pass on the negative, the second pass through the points on the positive choice, and then a third pass alternating between negative to positive. So there's a whole structured system, and it can be very helpful and good. One of the downsides of using it with clients that I've found is that lots of times it can take quite a while to come up with that positive choice.
Mm-hmm.
And you can spend the first 15, 20 minutes of the session just trying to come up with a positive choice.
Actually, one of the practitioners did that choices method on me. I was wondering why it sounded familiar.
Okay, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And so sometimes I'm not wanting to spend so much time trying to come up with a positive choice with a client.
Okay.
So the upside is, you know, the client comes up with a really good choice themselves. You help them come up with the choice, help them make it a better, more juicy choice, and then finally you do the tapping on it.
Okay.
Okay, so that's one method. Another method is to gradually transition in the course of the tapping from the negative towards the positive using the transitional phrase, what if?
Okay.
Because you're tapping on the negative. See, one of the things that's really hard about coming up with a positive choice in the beginning with the choices method, one of the reasons why it can take so long, is when the person is in a very negative place, it's very hard for them to come up with a positive choice.
I know, yeah, I was thinking that crossed
right.
my mind.
Yeah, things suck, so how can I think of anything good here? And that's really where they're coming from.
Mm-hmm.
So some people modify the choices method by saying, well, let's just do some, you know, basic negative tapping for a while until you feel at least somewhat better, and then we'll come up with a positive
choice.
That's
right, and that's kind of what I did today.
Okay, so that's another, you know, variation on the choices method. But there's another approach that isn't really the choices method, because you're thinking of the possibilities yourself for the client or for yourself, where you're working on the negative for a while, and then you bring in a positive possibility as a what-if statement.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, let's say, you know, you're feeling like, I'm trying to think of an example off the top of my head. So easy to do in session. It just sort of goes with the flow. But let's say, you know, the idea is you come up with a positive thought, but rather than affirm the positive thought, you say, what if positive thought? What if it's true? So, you know, what if people like me more than I realize? That'd be one possibility. You know, let's say you're feeling like nobody likes you, or you're feeling insecure and, you know, worried about people having all these negative critical thoughts about you and things like that. And you say, well, what if people are thinking good things about me?
Okay.
Rather than tapping, you know, I choose to believe that people are thinking good things. It's a bit of a stretch early on. But the nice thing about the what if is you're not saying it is true, so you don't have that immediate objection that you would have if you were just saying it as true. You're saying, what if it's true? Go ahead.
I like this.
Yeah, and it's very opening. The person feels open to the possibility. They don't resist it. And it starts to help shift them. And then you can play both sides of it. So you can say, well, what if this positive thing is true? And then on the next point, you go, but it's not true. And then you go on the next point, but what if it is true? And then you can even say after that, what would that feel like? I wonder what that would feel like. And even the wondering what something would feel like actually helps get you into what it would feel like. Because you kind of try it on for size. So I transition from the negative to the what if positive to what the positive would feel like. You know, what would that feel like if people were thinking good things about me? To eventually finally getting to affirming the positive.
Okay. So you're pretty much tapping and having kind of a conversation? Is that how
I'm thinking more of this as what I would do with a client.
Okay.
So I would just sort of, you know, intuitively do it when it just feels like a good moment to do it.
Okay.
You know, I could see that they're starting to lighten up, and then I'll start bringing in the what-if positives.
Okay.
And then I wonder what that would feel like. You have them repeat everything after you. And then you could even, you know, jump ahead. Might feel pretty cool. Feel pretty good, you know. And you just start moving towards the positive more and more.
All right.
That's method number two. Okay, here's number three. And this is actually something I read recently myself. I really liked it. Lots of times we start by measuring the negative feeling. And the negative feeling might start at some high number like an 8. We tap, tap, tap until we get it to 0.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And then when we get to 0, we go, okay, great. We did it. We're done.
Mm-hmm.
But the other side of the negative feeling is the positive feeling.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So you start by measuring the negative feeling from 0 to 10. You bring it down to 0, and then you ask the person to measure the positive side.
Okay.
How good they're feeling now. Now, typically, they will be feeling better. But on a scale of 0 to 10, it may be a moderate number, like a 4 or 5.
Okay.
We're still feeling 4 or 5 good is way better than feeling 8 or 9 bad.
Mm-hmm.
But 4 or 5 good is not as good as you can feel.
Mm-hmm.
So then you can even tap on that. Even though I'm only feeling good at a 4, I deeply and profoundly love and accept myself. And you start tapping on the lack of maximum goodness.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Until their level of good feeling rises. And you could even then bring in some more of these positive things, like, well, what if I felt that, you know, even better? Or you'd say it more specifically about whatever the thing is.
Okay.
What would that feel like? And you help the person grow their positive feeling as well.
Okay.
Why settle for simply the absence of the negative? You know, let's continue the tapping and bring up the positive all the way.
I like that. That's what I was looking for.
All right, good. So we have three different approaches for doing that.
Because it felt unfinished.
Yeah, exactly. And what you'll find is people really feel uplifted when you do that.
Mm.
See, when you go from 8 to 0, they feel relief.
Right.
Which in itself is good.
And that's what
when
I wanted today. I wanted to feel uplifted.
Yeah. So if you start tapping on bringing the positive side up after the negative is cleared out, you go to feeling uplifted.
Oh, thank you.
You're very welcome. All right, so I'll go ahead and mute you, and anybody else who'd like to say anything or questions, hit star 8. So I'm actually going to unmute everybody for the moment, so we can all talk simultaneously. One of the advantages of being a small group. So nobody's asking, jumping in with questions. So I'm wondering where people are at. People just kind of say what's on their mind and what's going on.
It's Glenys here. Yeah, I found what you've just been talking about really very, very good. I have used that with people, that third method. I've used the third method that you mentioned. And
okay.
I found it very, very successful with people through reading. I have done the choices method, but the third method that you mentioned, I don't know where I've seen it, but I've seen it along the way. I think it's probably watching some of the UK masters, you know, at the master classes.
Uh-huh.
I found it brilliant. And hearing you talk about it, you know, it's brought it back home to me as well. You know, I think I need to do more of that with people.
Yeah, it's so easy to get all focused on the negative.
Yeah, yeah.
And kind of forget that there's to build up the positive as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like the way you've gone into it. You've gone into it very thoroughly for us.
No, thank you.
So thank you for that.
Yes, you have a very orderly approach to answering questions that I find extremely beneficial.
Oh, great. Thank you. I appreciate that.
I agree.
Yes, well, thanks again. Well, I'm feeling uplifted.
You unmute us all and we lavish you with praise.
That was great. Oh, boy. Nice. All right. Well, any more questions? We'll stay unmuted for a while, see how well that works.
You know, I think what happens is it's all such good information that I'm processing what I heard, and the questions will come up like an hour later.
Right.
Maybe in the future I'd like to hear more examples of this third option.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things we can do, this is our class, we can decide what we want to do with it. We can actually do some tapping. You know, we could do a little borrowing benefits tapping where somebody volunteers to be the subject, and we'll work with that person and use, you know, we can use two of the three methods. Choices method, you know, you have to spend a lot of time on, but, you know, I could do a demonstration with somebody where I use methods two and three.
Yeah.
And I would be very happy to do that, but I'd kind of like to see if anybody has any more questions first before doing that, because that could take a little while to do a demo. So, you know, I love doing demos, so I'd be happy to.
And I've been fortunate enough to see you do one in person.
Say that again?
This is Susan, and I've been fortunate enough to actually see you do them.
Oh, all right. Thanks. Yeah, so does anybody have any questions before jumping into doing a demo?
I can't think of any at the moment.
Okay.
I wanted to tell you your website looks amazing.
Oh, thanks.
No, you've been. It's the new version, and it looks wonderful.
Oh, great. Well, thank you.
I'm very,
very much
envious of your talent.
Oh, thank you. Actually, let me just take a quick moment here to mention something else. I have just launched live yesterday a new website for EFT workshops and teleclasses to replace the one that Gary is going to be shutting down on his website on October 1st.
Is he actually shutting that down?
What?
He's actually shutting that down? Wow.
Well, that's what he said. I mean, he could always change his mind, I suppose, but that's what he announced, that he's going to shut it down October 1st.
Oh, wow.
So I've set up an alternative site. It's at eftbyworkshop.cc, as in Charlie. And I put out a notification to other practitioners, and there's already, last count, 45 workshops now listed on there.
Wow.
Just in the past first 2 days.
So could you say that again? EFTbyworkshop.cc.
Yeah.
.cc.
That's right. EFTbyworkshop.cc, or I have two domain names for it. EFT-workshops.net. EFT-workshops, plural, .net. They both go to the same place.
Okay, I found it. And what is Gary shutting down?
His workshop directory. You know, he has a workshop directory now.
I didn't know about that.
Yeah, he announced that he's shutting it down October 1st.
I didn't know he had one. Okay, well.
Things are changing.
Yeah, they are changing. So anyway, I have one that will, you know, that I'm offering as a replacement, as a service to the community.
Oh, that's great.
So if any of you are giving workshops, feel free to, you know, submit your workshops there. It's self-service.
Which is what I need to work on.
What?
I said, which is my issues that I need to work on.
Well, all right. Maybe that would be a great thing to do the demo on.
Could be.
You know, one of the things that, you know, is great to do as an EFT practitioner is to give workshops.
Mm-hmm.
For multiple reasons. I mean, I love giving them, but there's great advantages at multiple levels for giving a workshop as a practitioner. One is you get visibility. You know, so it's a good way to promote yourself. Two, it can be, once you get through any discomfort you have with it, it can be a lot of fun and a great way to help a bunch of people at once. It's also, if you get a good turnout, a nice source of income.
Lucrative,
yeah.
I'd like to be doing mostly workshops and teleclasses.
Say that again?
I said I'd like to be doing mostly teleclasses and workshops.
Yeah. So let's get some boldness going here. So any questions before we jump into a demo on doing workshops?
No, because I'm also interested in doing workshops and teleclasses. So I think we're all in a similar mind here, aren't we?
Well, that was my question. There's three of you. Are any of the three of you already doing workshops or teleclasses?
No.
No. Would we be doing a demo on confidence to do so?
Well, that's just it. Yes, that's the thing. We will be doing a demo on whatever blocks there are to giving workshops. Because one of the wonderful things about EFT is you can do a workshop at almost any level of competency and have a good time with it and help people. You know, it's not even necessarily an issue of giving it an approved level one workshop where you're training people. You know, you may not feel like you're solid enough in your EFT knowledge and skills to do that, but you can do a unofficial EFT workshop on a particular topic or just an introductory thing, a borrowing benefits group, any of these kind of things, and have great results.
Very good.
So, you know, I would encourage everybody to do workshops and or teleclasses. And they really can be fun once you get comfortable with it.
I actually have a group of four women who all I've taken over a friend's practice as a physical therapy aide, and she specializes in TMJ injuries. And these are all really serious injuries. And I treat all these people individually. And today on my way home, I was thinking, what a wonderful thing, because they all need EFT. And
sure.
I've gotten permission from the person who owns the practice to offer it to them. And I was thinking,
excellent,
what a wonderful thing it would be to do a teleclass where there's, you know, everyone can be anonymous, but still share all their frustrations in a group setting, in a safe place.
Or they may be happy to do it in person. And just have, you know, all agree to confidentiality. You know, so either way, both would be great. So lots of times here's the thing. For people who aren't natural hams who, you know, just love being out in the public eye and giving teleclasses or workshops or whatever, there's going to be some discomfort and resistance. And lots of times people have this feeling like, you know, I just don't feel quite ready. I'm not quite ready. And if you wait till you're ready, you may be waiting for a very long time. You know, you may never feel totally ready. And sometimes you just got to break the ice and do one, whether you feel ready or not.
I can really associate with that. I'm always not feeling quite ready.
Exactly.
You know, and then when I do something, I feel really high and really good about myself and think, that's it, I'm going to get in there now and start training.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
I can run the groups. I've run lots of groups where it's been facilitating, but there's a difference between facilitating and actually teaching. Because with teaching, you're coming up with the goodies more. And I think, oh, people might ask me something I don't know. You know, that it's around those sort of fears.
Yeah, so these are some of the fears and insecurities are coming up for you. Like, you know, is it a crime not to know the answer to a question?
Perfectionism.
<Right. laughs> So, you know, I mean, you can say, you know, that's a really good question, and I'll have to get back to you on that. You know, I don't know the answer to that one. But again, you know.
I'll hear know the answer.
What?
I usually deflect it back to the group and say, is there anyone here that knows the answer to that question?
That's right. You can certainly do that. You also just don't have to know the answer to every question.
Well, see, I think you're perfect, and I'll be beating myself up that I can't do it like you.
Okay, so here's some of the things that are coming out, right? Not feeling, you know, good enough or whatever. So it sounds like all three of you would like to move in this direction. All three of you are feeling some internal discomforts around it. So let's do a borrowing benefits thing. I'll work with one of you, and the other two will tap along as well. And let's see if we can get you all moving in the direction of being more comfortable doing workshops.
Can I ask you, my parrot is talking in the background. Is it bothering anybody?
No.
Oh, is that what that is? I can hear it a little bit. It's not too bad.
Okay.
So who would like to be the guinea pig here?
I will.
Okay. So work it out between the two of you. I heard two volunteers.
Okay.
Go ahead. I'll be the borrowing benefits person.
Okay, so who's left?
Kathleen.
Oh. Who is it?
It's you.
Oh, okay. So
is
I have
Kathleen?
Yes.
Is
okay,
that Kathleen?
Yes.
Right.
Well, it's Kathleen, right?
Yes.
Kathleen.
Yes.
Kathleen, okay. Okay, so Kathleen, you know, share with, so the rest of you, everybody besides Kathleen, well, actually all three of you, think, imagine yourselves standing in front of a group of people giving an EFT workshop. And notice the first discomfort that comes up for you. And it may be, you know, something like I'm not ready, or maybe some very specific thing like what if I don't know the answer to the question, or, you know, some of the things that you guys have already mentioned, but pick the one that seems to come up the strongest.
Do you want us to say?
Not yet. Just get in touch with it for yourselves. And once you're in touch with what that is, measure it on a scale of 0 to 10, how strong it is. This is how we do borrowing benefits, right? Is everybody pick something that they would tap on if they were the ones, they were the demo person. And then they assess on how intense it is on a 0 to 10 scale. Okay. Is anybody not done yet? Okay. Now the two of you who are not Kathleen, you're just going to let go of your thing. And we're going to put all of our attention on Kathleen, and we're going to tap along with her, saying the same things that she says as if we are her. And then what we will hopefully discover is that our own thing will get addressed as well. So, Kathleen, tell me what your thing was, your biggest discomfort with giving a workshop.
That I won't be articulate, and that, you know, what I want to say won't roll out smoothly.
Okay. And what would happen if you weren't articulate and it didn't roll out smoothly?
Then I would be humiliated.
Okay. So just as a point for everybody, when somebody says something, I will usually try and get it a step more specific than whatever people start with. These people tend to not go all the way to the bottom on the first pass. So the surface fear is I might stumble as I speak, and then beneath that is that if I was to stumble when I spoke, I'd feel humiliated, right? Now, there's going to be something below that as well, but we can start there, okay? So Kathleen and everybody else, let's all tap together, starting with your crotch up point. Even though I'm afraid I'll stumble when I speak.
Even though I'm afraid I'll stumble when I speak.
And Glennis and Susan, go ahead and repeat it with Kathleen. We're all doing it together.
Right.
I deeply and profoundly love and accept myself.
I deeply and profoundly love and accept myself.
Good. Even though I'm afraid, I'll stumble when I speak and I'll feel humiliated.
Even though I'll stumble when I speak and I'll feel humiliated.
I deeply and profoundly love and accept myself.
I deeply and profoundly love and accept myself.
With kindness and compassion.
Kindness and compassion.
What was that?
With kindness and compassion.
With kindness and compassion.
I like to use that one when people are being hard on themselves.
That's a good one.
Oh, I'm hard on myself.
I got that, so I figured that's why that would be a good one to use here. So, one last time. Even though I'm afraid I will be... Now, here's another thing I like doing. I like exaggerating things in a mildly humorous way. Even though I'm afraid I'll be a bumbling idiot...
Even though I'm afraid I'll be a bumbling idiot.
Even though I'm afraid I'll be a bumbling idiot.
I deeply and profoundly accept who I am.
I deeply and profoundly accept who I am. Not really.
Even though I'm not accepting myself around this at all right now.
Even though I'm not accepting myself around this at all right now.
I deeply and profoundly love and accept myself.
I deeply and profoundly love and accept myself.
Okay, good. Top of your head. I'm afraid I'll stumble when I speak.
Afraid I'll stumble when I speak.
And remember, everybody else, you're saying it's along with her, too.
I'm afraid I'll stumble when I speak.
Yeah. I'm afraid that I'll be humiliated.
I'm afraid that I'll be humiliated.
People will think that I'm incompetent.
Uh-huh. People will think that I'm incompetent.
People will think that I'm incompetent.
They'll think, what the hell is she doing leading this workshop?
They'll think, what the hell is she doing leading this workshop?
We never stumble when we speak. She must be some kind of bumbling fool. But I'm still afraid that I might stumble when I speak. See, I just stumbled a little bit now. I'm already feeling a little humiliated. And like to say, if any thoughts or feelings or memories come up while we're tapping, just stop me right away and let me know.
Okay.
Okay. So, afraid that I'll stumble when I speak.
People will think I'm stupid.
Okay. So, at this point, there's a few different branching points that we could take. So, I'm going to make this sort of a teaching example. As soon as you said, Kathleen, and people will think I'm stupid, the thought that immediately came to my mind is, okay, when in your childhood did people think you were stupid? You know, when did you have an experience like this? Where, you know, maybe you gave a book report and you were kind of stumbling, trying to speak, and the kids in your class laughed, or who knows what. So there might be...
Yeah, my uncle would say I was stupid because I didn't know the answer to his question.
Okay. So let's work with the uncle. So anyway, well, let me just give you some alternatives. So one alternative at this point, especially when somebody volunteers something new like that, people will think I'm stupid. You know, immediately little bells go off in my head going, aha, she must have been told she was stupid before. So sure enough, you know, your uncle used to do that. You know,
but normally you'd finish the round before you went on to the, before you latched on to that, though, right?
No, not at all.
No?
If something new comes up that's deeper, I'll usually switch right to that. See, right now we're starting at a more surface level, which is just her experience. You know, as I imagine giving a workshop, what comes up for me is I'm afraid that I won't be articulate, that I'll stumble when I speak, and I questioned her a little further, and she said then I'd feel humiliated. So we just started tapping on that, and sometimes that's all it takes. You know, you never know with EFT. Sometimes that's sufficient. So it's never wrong to just start there. See, sometimes, you know, you get one of your one-minute wonders, and the person goes, wow, that feeling just completely went away, and now I'm excited about the idea of giving a workshop. But other times, you know, most of our issues come from our childhood, and what you really need to do is get in touch with the underlying issue. Sometimes as we're tapping, people will just spontaneously remember something. Or, as in this case, they'll just spontaneously say something new about it. Like, people will think I'm stupid. So she's now naming something that somebody's going to do to her. And as soon as I hear that kind of thing, I start thinking, okay, did this happen already in childhood? So I would often say, did somebody tell you you were stupid when you were a kid? And sure enough, she said, my uncle. Which case, let's go ahead and switch it to the uncle. And then we'll come back to the current experience. So uncle, what's his first name?
Randy.
Randy?
Yes.
Okay. So, and what did he say specifically?
Well, he had asked me if I knew what the song was that was playing on the radio. And I don't remember the, you know, what I said and what he said. He was always criticizing me.
Yeah. So is there some kind of phrase that sounds like something he might have said?
I don't remember.
Okay. You did say, though, that he called you stupid in some way.
Yeah.
So can we just use as a phrase, even though he may not have said this exactly, but it's sort of the message that came across anyway, like, oh, Kathleen, you're stupid.
Yeah, that I'm just not smart.
You're not smart.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So let's make it a little stronger. Let's use the you're stupid version. It kind of fits what you said. People will think I'm stupid. And let's start tapping your crotch at point. And we're going to, the way I do this, when I want to decharge something that we heard from somebody else, is the tapping phrase is them saying it to us, rather than saying something like, even though Uncle Randy told me I was stupid. Notice that that's an indirect way of saying it.
Right.
So I'll say, okay, just hear Uncle Randy say it to you, and I'll go tap on your crotch point and say, even though, Kathleen, you're stupid.
Even though, Kathleen, you're stupid.
And the idea is you're hearing him say that to you.
Right.
I deeply and profoundly love and accept myself.
I deeply and profoundly love and accept myself.
Even though, Kathleen, you're stupid.
Even though, Kathleen, you're stupid.
I deeply and profoundly love and accept myself.
I deeply and profoundly love and accept myself.
With kindness and compassion.
With kindness and compassion.
For the little girl who was on the receiving end of that meanness.
The little girl that was on the receiving end of that meanness.
But even though, Kathleen, you're stupid.
Even though, Kathleen, you're stupid.
I deeply and profoundly love and accept myself anyway.
I deeply and profoundly love and accept myself anyway.
Good. Top of your head. Kathleen, you're stupid.
Kathleen, you're stupid.
Next point again.
Kathleen, you're stupid.
Again.
Kathleen, you're stupid.
We're just going to decharge a little bit for a minute. Again.
Kathleen, you're stupid.
Next point.
Kathleen, you're stupid.
What? Another one?
Hmm?
Kathleen, you're stupid. All right, now, we're going to use a little Gestalt-influenced technique in the EFT. I want you to tell him how that makes you feel.
Tell him how it makes me feel? Well,
yeah,
that I'm not valued.
Yeah, but I mean, your feelings towards him.
Oh.
Are you feeling hurt by what he said?
Oh, yeah, hurt.
Okay.
Yeah, crushed.
Say, Uncle Randy, that really hurts me.
Uncle Randy, that really hurts me.
And you're doing this as you tap on each point. So again, tell him it really hurts me.
Uncle Randy, that really hurts me when you say that.
Yeah, it makes me feel bad about myself.
Makes me feel bad about myself.
Makes me doubt my intelligence.
Makes me doubt my intelligence.
Over a stupid song.
Over a stupid song.
Does that seem a little unfair to you?
Does that seem really fair to you?
No, I'm asking you that question.
Oh.
Does that seem fair to you?
No.
That you would do that?
No.
Yeah. So is that kind of, you know, the unfairness of it all, does that kind of make you feel just a little mad?
Well, I guess so.
I mean, we tend to react to unfairness with anger. We feel angry when we perceive unfairness or when somebody violates our boundaries. So try it on for size. Hey, Uncle Randy, that makes me mad that you'd call me stupid.
Uncle Randy, that makes me mad that you would call me stupid.
That's really unfair of you.
Really unfair of you.
That's not right.
Not right.
That's an uncool thing to do.
An uncool thing to do.
So what if I don't know the name of the song? What's that got to do with my intelligence?
Now you've made me feel afraid to speak out.
Yeah. And is that fair?
No.
So tell him.
Not fair.
That wasn't fair you did that.
Wasn't fair that you did that.
You make me all self-conscious about speaking out.
Made me all self-conscious about speaking out. I'm afraid to say anything now.
And that sucks.
That sucks. Because
I'm mad at you. Yeah, I really look up to you and you're doing this.
I really look up to you and you're doing this to me.
It's like a betrayal.
And
that makes me mad.
That
makes me sad. Makes me really sad that you would do that.
Makes me really sad that you would think of me that way.
Right. And it makes me mad that you would treat me that way. So what's your truth that you want to tell him?
Me?
Yeah.
Well, that I have value.
So tell him.
And I have value.
Okay. What else do you want to say to him?
How dare you treat me like that?
Right.
Like you're real smart.
Is that a smart thing to do on his part as an adult?
Huh?
Was that a smart thing for him to do as an adult?
No, he was just a punk kid. He's 4 years older than me.
Oh, okay. When you said uncle, I was thinking that he was much older. Okay. So he's a punk kid.
Yeah, he was very much a punk kid.
Yeah. So what else do you want to say to him, speaking your truth?
You just had no right putting me on the spot and quizzing me like that, knowing that I wouldn't know the answer.
Yeah, you set me up.
You set me up. Yeah, you did.
I messed up.
Hmm?
Right? Go ahead.
You did set me up.
Right. You feel a little pissed about that?
Well, yeah. He set me up so to make himself look smarter.
Yeah, say it to him.
You set me up to make yourself look smarter. You didn't need to use me to do that.
Yeah, pisses me off you did that.
Pisses me off you did that.
A little twerp. Okay. So let me just explain what I'm doing, especially since we're getting towards the end here. The Gestalt method is, the idea is that you want to address the person who did whatever they did to you, like in this case, Uncle Randy, young Uncle Randy. So remember, there's all those feelings, and, you know, lots of times we feel hurt, lots of times we feel angry. We want to express them all. And it's very helpful in terms to really speed up the clearing process to address the person directly in your tapping rather than simply talking about the person in your tapping, which is sort of the more traditional approach. This is where the Gestalt techniques kind of get blended in, which I find very helpful.
Yeah, I felt
difference. What?
I felt the difference.
Yeah, didn't it feel more impactful?
Yes.
That's right. So what I'll do in the Gestalt theory to finish what's called finishing unfinished business, you want to express all of the unexpressed emotions and speak your truth. Okay, those are the things you want to do to heal some original scene. You want to express your emotions to the person who did what they did and speak your truth to them, whatever the truth is. And that really helps clear things out. So that's one of the things we've been doing. That's what I was just doing with you. Now, check in with your original feeling. I didn't ask you what the number was originally. What was the number around being afraid to stumble and stuff like that?
You know, it goes up to a 10 if I actually have to stand up and do it. But knowing that I don't have to, it's hard for me to get that up there.
Okay. Well, do you feel any difference as you imagine, you know, standing in front of a group leading a workshop?
I wouldn't really know until I actually had to do it.
Well, when
I
you
always
first imagine. What?
Which I'm always good at avoiding.
Okay. So when you first imagined it, when I asked you, did you feel any reaction then?
Not really.
Oh, okay. So we didn't do this with you actually being in touch with the feelings. Though you were aware of what would come up for you.
Oh, absolutely.
All right. So we did do some helpful work around this Randy fellow.
Oh, absolutely.
I'll be very interested. Send me an email next time you're in front of a group and see how you feel, if you feel any different.
Okay.
Well, let's check in with the other two. You guys got in touch with the feeling, wrote down the number. Check in again with whatever that was and see what the number is for you now. And let's see if the borrowing benefits helped you.
Yeah, Glenn is here. Yeah, I was 7 initially. I've moved to 2 now. I've moved down to 2. I still got a little bit of a wrench in my stomach because the physical feelings were a tightening in the stomach.
Uh-huh.
It's still there slightly, but not as much.
So if I heard you correctly, you went from a 7 to a 2?
That's right.
Oh, good. So that was a big drop.
Yes.
And how about Susan? Did you experience a change?
Yeah, I went up, though.
You went up.
I went up because listening to Kathleen, several things came up for me that I hadn't thought about in quite some time.
Okay, so it helps you get in touch with more things.
Exactly.
Okay. Well, if we had more time, I'd work with you that. But does anybody have any questions about the methodology I used? I didn't have the opportunity to demonstrate, you know, the introducing the positive so much. It was a pretty short demo, so it just didn't feel like it fit in this particular case.
Yeah, I've got a question about the Gestalt dialoguing, because,
sure.
You know, for years I've done the Gestalt dialoguing before I learned the EFT, because I learned Gestalt first before EFT. I started bringing the tapping in with clients at the same time as they're doing the dialoguing, but sometimes they stop tapping when they're talking, and I'm wondering if it's better to keep them tapping all the time they're doing the dialoguing.
Well, it sounds like you're doing the opposite of what I'm doing. I mean, I also learned Gestalt first and did it for many years before I learned EFT, but when I learned EFT, I dropped the Gestalt and did just EFT for a period of time, and then I started to bring a little Gestalt elements into my EFT. It sounds like you're sort of trying to bring a little EFT into your Gestalt.
That's right, yeah. Yeah, that's the dilemma. I'm wondering what to do, really, you know, now.
Yeah, I would suggest you try it the other way around, that you do EFT, and like in a case like this where you get, you know, a person gets in touch with a memory, you then sort of bring in some Gestalt flavor to the tapping, which is what I did.
Yeah.
Right. We were doing regular tapping, and then as we were working with her experience with her uncle Randy, I had her, you know, hear his words directly and then address her words to him directly. So I think of it as, you know, Gestalt influenced EFT, whereas what you're doing is EFT influenced Gestalt.
Yeah. What I found that some of the clients that I might have had for, say, 2 or 3 years, they are wanting the relationship contact, and they don't seem to want to do the EFT.
It's often a case with a long-term client that they're just used to and attached to the thing that they know. And, you know, even if you say, wow, I got this great technique, and it's even better than the Gestalt I've been doing so long, you know, you want to do it, they go, well.
Yeah, and I've tried it with them, but they still, the following week, they don't really always want to do EFT. They just want to go into the normal way that we've been working previously.
Yeah, that's okay. It's a common phenomenon that people resist change, you know. So they like the Gestalt you do together. They like working with you. They like doing Gestalt with you. And maybe that's just all they want to do.
Right. So you just go along with that because that's what the client wants.
Yeah, I mean, you know, they're paying me to help them. And in my mind, you know, the client is ultimately in charge. So, you know, I'm going to do whatever the client really wants. I will give them my viewpoint on it, and I may encourage them to do different things, but ultimately it's still their choice.
Yeah, because, I mean, with one particular client, I feel that I could shift quite a lot of things with her if we use EFT more related to her early life experiences, but she is resistant to it.
She's resistant to
separation. She's got a lot of anxieties around loss and separation, and I don't think she wants to give me up and get better too quick.
Yeah, well, you could certainly tap on that.
Mm. Yeah.
Not the give you up part, but the separation part. Because if you go straight for that, that may be a little threatening.
Yeah, that's an idea.
Mm. Yeah. So, well, we're at the end. It's been great talking and working with you all.
Thank you.
I've really enjoyed it. Even though I went to bed and had to wake up for it at 1 o'clock in the morning in the UK.
Wow.
It's I've really enjoyed this. It's been great.
Oh, great. Well, I very much enjoyed having you all on this call together. It's been a very nice group. It's been very synergistic with each
thank
other.
Thank you for having us, Stefan.
Yes, thank you.
You're very welcome. And I look forward to the opportunity of being in service in the future.
We look forward to it.
Good night, everyone.
Good night. Okay,
good night.
Thank you for sharing.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
See you next time.
Bye. Thank you.
Bye, all.